San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Sunday, September 14, 2025. Today's lesson is Everything is Beautiful with Dr. Constance Cook Kaur. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome home to the San Diego Center for Spiritual Living. We are blessed beyond measure to simply be fully present here and now. This is September 14th, and we have been having a very rapidly moving year. It's like time has been flying for our 2025 theme of simple abundance. And our theme for this month is beauty. September is all about beauty. The Simple Abundance is from this book by Sarah Bond Breathnot. And she has different principles in abundant and simple abundance. But I want to read you just a little bit that she has here. September's song is a two-part harmony as summer's lighthearted serenade ends and a deeper melody begins. For 8 months, we've plowed and sowed the soulful seeds of gratitude, simplicity, order, and harmony into our lives. Now, an authentic harvest of contentment waits to be gathered in. At the fifth simple abundance principle, beauty beckons us to partake in her bounty. Begin to reap the rich harvest that love hath sown. So let's anchor ourselves into this morning with that beautiful wording on beauty. There is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence that flows through all creation. And I call this God, the living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being. And so it is. You know, the dictionary defines beauty as a feature of objects that makes them pleasurable to perceive. A feature of objects. And I object. To define beauty as anything that is pleasing to the senses or pleasurable to receive and perceive is a misleading definition. That's not what beauty is at all. That can be applied to anything. That is visual convenience. When we look at something and we go, I'm not rejecting it because it's not out of order. It's not cacophonous. It's not offensive. That doesn't, just because something is not offensive doesn't mean it's beautiful. Doesn't mean that. When you look at a person or you talk about someone that you know, how many times have you heard somebody say, well, she's good looking or she's pretty, but she's not beautiful. She's not beautiful. That is not an insult. That's the difference between visual convenience and real beauty. Because the outside is never where beauty lives. I tried to find beauty in the Science of Mind glossary and in our dear Dr. D's How to Speak Science of Mind or How to Speak Religious Science. I couldn't find it. It's not there. Absolutely not there. You know why? Because it is a quality of God. In our qualities of God, beauty is defined as loveliness, the quality in a person or thing that gives pleasure to the senses or pleasurability that exalts the mind or spirit. Beauty exalts the mind or spirit, which lets us know right away it's not a thing. It's not a thing at all. Ernest Holmes is the founder of the Science of Mind movement and the author of many books, including the Science of Mind textbook. And he says on page 72 in the second paragraph, he's talking about principles. Beauty, as a quality of God, can also be called a principle or the execution of a principle. He writes, the principle of any science is invisible, theoretical, as is our idea of spirit. No one has seen God. No one has seen life. What we have seen is the manifestation of life. No one has seen intelligence. We experience it. No one has ever seen causation. We see what it does. We deal with its effects. We do not see beauty. I'm going to repeat that. We do not see beauty. The artist feels beauty and depicts it as best as he can. And the result of his effort is what we call the beautiful. The mathematician solves a problem, but the problem is not the principle of mathematics. The solution of the problem is an effect or a result of the application of principle. We do not see life. We experience living. Causation is invisible. I'm going to read that part about beauty again. We do not see beauty. The artist feels beauty and depicts it as best as he can. And the result of the effort is what we call beautiful. Beautiful. And so we sit here and we go, wow, how cool. That's just amazing. I really got that at its essence. And then we look around and we go, oh, that is beautiful. Looking at something that has no essence. There is a trap of beauty. And I was talking to my brother, you know, my brother that I talk to from time to time about obscure and metaphysical and deep technical things. We talk. And so we were talking about beauty. I told him, this month our theme is beauty. And he just laughed. And he said, good luck. I said, what do you mean? It's so simple. And he goes, really? And we got into another one of our three-hour conversations, and you get to benefit from some of the things that he reminded me of in our talk. Because remember, we don't really learn things. We get triggers that help us remember. So we want to remember the truth that we already know deep inside. There's a trap of beauty, and it is closely tied to Madison Avenue propaganda, advertising. One of the things that is called beauty is symmetry. And I talked about symmetry in the month where we were doing harmony, and how the classical beauty that we have had defined to us is symmetry, the balanced features, the organization of all the different parts of the body into a mathematically precise relationship and ratio. Well, that's really not beauty, that's symmetry. And if something can be symmetrical, then something can be asymmetrical. And all asymmetrical means is it's different from the norm. because the norm, we have been told, is symmetry. And again, that's just visual convenience. There are cultural things that we are told are beautiful. But we are told that piece of art is beautiful. That fabric is beautiful. And so we buy into these things without really experiencing beauty. It's just convenient. Aesthetics is a field of study in philosophy. And aesthetics is another form of defining what is supposed to be beautiful. We want something soft when we're in a soft environment. We want something bright when we're in a bright environment. And so the aesthetics help us to create a visual environment that we want people to experience. That's not beauty. That is planning. That is looking at what people have been taught and applying what we've all been socialized into thinking to create an atmosphere that we get to define as beautiful for other people. Doesn't mean it's beautiful. Madison Avenue also, and Hollywood, will give us beauty icons and say, this person, this image is what is beautiful. This is beauty right here. And then all of the fans and the people out in the public go, oh, that's beautiful. I want to go get my haircut like that beautiful person's haircut. I want to dress like that beautiful person's dress outfits are. Liz Taylor and Richard Burton were iconic beauties. And yet, everybody tried to imitate how they looked, how they talked, their accents, but that wasn't beauty. That was mimicry. All of the propagandists and the marketers are telling us what to think about beauty. They are telling us what to think. We don't do that here. We do not ever tell you what to think. We teach you how to think, how to evaluate things and discriminate amongst the different things that you're living in relationship to you. Because if you only think about the things that I tell you to think about, I'm doing both of us a disservice. So you'll notice when I tell you to think about something, it's to think about what you're thinking about, which is a very powerful thing. So we are told what to think that beauty is. And that doesn't capture what beauty should bring. We have finishing schools. You send the socialites off to these all-girls schools in Europe and have them all come out cookie-cutter socialites, because they are being taught society's marker for beauty. There are an infinite number of opinions and ideas about what beauty is, and that is the fallacy. That is the trap. When we allow ourselves to fall into that trap of thinking that something has to have certain characteristics in order to be beautiful. It doesn't. So beauty is not symmetry. Think about art. Every great work of art, it is not symmetrical. The statues are not symmetrical. All of the different statues, like David, the Pietà, the great pieces of art, they are not symmetrical because they allow for life. They allow for feelings in that piece of art. It's important to feel the art, not grade it on, okay, so Mona Lisa, she's not sitting straight forward, so I take off a point because she's sitting at an angle. I take off a point because the trees in the background aren't, you know, perfectly symmetrical and arranged properly. No, it's beauty. It's beautiful. Beauty is a feeling. It's an idea. I'm going to quote my brother here because what he said was so profound I wrote it down. Beauty itself is your appreciation of the grace that beauty brings with it. Beauty itself is your appreciation of the grace that beauty brings with it. So, what is grace? What is grace? It comes from a Greek word, charis, charis, which means God's blessings, spontaneous, undeserved gift rooted in goodness and mercy. That's the Greek definition of that word. Biblically, it is known as the unmerited, freely given favor, kindness, and love that God gives to humanity, that this kindness and love of God towards humanity. So it's like, here's God loving us so much that all of this is pouring forth into our lives. So there's this feeling. And beauty itself is magnificent. Is absolutely magnificent. Bring to mind something that so moved you when you saw it or heard it that you stopped to fully absorb yourself in that moment because you were so moved by its beauty. One of the things that's fun is when we have the freedom of being fearless, of living our life fearlessly, of knowing that, you know, it doesn't matter if I die today or tomorrow or 50 years from now. Doesn't matter. I am not going to allow my fears to hold me back from fully experiencing everything that I want to experience. Do I want to climb to the top of a mountain? Cool. Does my age make a difference? Well, no. I mean, it may to somebody else. They may be afraid they're not going to make it. They're going to trip. They're going to fall. But no. Whatever it is that I choose to do, knowing that I made that decision means it's okay for me to do. And if I have some kind of an experience others would call negative along the way, big deal. Oh, well, so what? One of the experiences my brother had in his living a fearless life was he goes every year on the anniversary of his youngest son's passing, and he goes to some place to distribute a portion of the ashes. So my nephew Hunter is all over. He's all over the different places that he and my brother went or talked about going. And on one occasion, my brother wanted to take some of the ashes up to the top of this craggy mountain. He lives in the Appalachians, so. So what he said is you go to the end of the road, and then it's a 7.5 mile hike in and a 7.5 mile hike out. And as he was getting his stuff ready to go, he's packing his backpack with water bottles and some food and stuff. But, you know, he's got plenty of time. It's not going to take him forever. And he's walking out and he sees a 100-foot rope that is his, and he goes, huh, I'll take the rope with me. Rope goes in the backpack. He gets up there. It's nice, isolated, and on his way up, he's seen several bears, and basically the bears go, oh, you don't bother me, and I won't bother you, and you just keep on going. So while he was up there, something happened that caused him to pull a hamstring. And so he's thinking, now how am I going to get 7.5 miles out of here with a pulled hammy? That 100-foot rope, he tied it onto something and made hand and foot loops in it and dropped it over the side. So he was able to go down there. And once he got to the bottom of the rope, he was going to drop about 10 feet. And this is interesting because he said, I was going to land on my good leg. And then it was like something hit me upside of the head and said, then you'll have two bad legs and you won't get out at all. So he landed on his bad leg, but he was okay. Kind of gimpy limping out of this area, and he noticed a bear following him. Didn't care about him going in, but now he's wounded. So the bear is following like at a regular distance. And one of the things that my brother takes with him on these isolated hikes is a weapon. So he said he was limping along with his hand on the weapon, just in case the bear decided it wanted to get close. He had bear spray and his weapon. But he gets all the way down to this, to where you're no longer in wilderness. There's actually a path again. And a bunch of people there were waiting to go up, and they wanted him to stay and camp with him. And he said, no, I can't, because I have to go home, because I told a couple of my friends, this is where I'm going. I will be home by dark. I will call you and check in. So that if he didn't, they would know, as I told my kids, when to worry and where to start looking for the body. So he actually made it home. And in thinking about the trip, he realized he truly did live a fearless life. Anything could have happened, and everything was okay. Whatever had happened was okay. And so there is a freedom, an inherent freedom of living that fearless life. And the side effect of that freedom is being able to see more beauty everywhere. More beauty. If there's a bear, wow, that's a beautiful animal. If it's walking behind me, yes, it's still a beautiful animal, but I am mindful of it. Fyodor Dostoevsky said, only the heart knows how to find what is precious. Only the heart knows how to find what is precious. And so we can always ask ourselves, what makes me sense beauty? What do I find in this emotion, this fullness of life that makes me appreciate it? Because I'm not seeing it, I'm feeling it. In many spiritual traditions, beauty is considered to originate from God, reflecting a divine art or a presence in creation. And nature will give you great beauty and joy and wonder. There is a quote, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. Now that's a famous opening line of a long poem by the English romantic poet John Keats, and it's called Endymion. Endymion. I don't know that word, and you know, I forgot to look it up. But the poem Endymion talks about beauty, and that whether it's found in nature or art, it provides lasting and increasing happiness. It never fades, but instead offers a lasting source of peace and delight. The poem suggests that beauty helps us to endure life's struggles by connecting us to something eternal and uplifting our spirits. There are four elements that are covered in Endymion. The first is lasting joy. Beautiful things possess an intrinsic quality that provides enduring pleasure, even as other aspects of life change or fade. But remember that beauty is your appreciation of the grace that beauty brings with it. So as you change, and as you change your appreciation of something you found beautiful, you may also find that your appreciation can increase or decrease. Something that you found beautiful at 12 years old, you may look at now and go, yeah, that is really nice. It did make me feel good. However, I've moved on. I have a greater awareness of what can be appreciated and what can't. But if it is truly beautiful, then it doesn't diminish over time. In fact, the impact on your spirit can grow. For solace and connection, enduring beauty can act as a spiritual refuge, a peaceful shelter, and sweet dreams during sleep. A spiritual refuge. These are the kinds of things I had. A statue, our family had a statue of the Pietà, and we had it because I wanted it. And when I would go to the cathedral, the Catholic church, the big church downtown, I would sit toward the back near the big replica of the Pietà, bigger than life size. And I would just sit there and feel what moved my soul, what was like a sanctuary. If you've never looked at the face of Mother Mary in that, it is so filled with unconditional love that this is her son lying in her lap. And there is a deep, deep feeling for me in that. And it has nothing to do with the structure or that it's made of marble or that it's, you know, one thing or another. It is the feeling, the beauty that is there that I am appreciating. And there is a power in beauty. True beauty goes beyond what the eye can see. A flawless face may capture attention, like the Madison Avenue things, but it's the kindness in your heart, the wisdom in your mind, and the goodness in your soul that leave a lasting impact. Beauty is a soul connection. It's the quality present in something that gives intense pleasure or deep satisfaction to the mind. The Bible actually defines beauty as the inner qualities, not the appearance or temporary adornments. It calls out beauty as being a gentle spirit, fear of the Lord, and righteous living. It emphasizes that true enduring beauty is a reflection of one's heart and character, reflecting God's own glory and possessing great worth in His sight. Also in the Science of Mind textbook on page 411, Ernest Holmes wrote, "The relationship between the individual and the universal mind is one of reflection. That is, what we imagine, what we image for ourselves, it images for us. What we see in our mind becomes our experience." Why? Because of this great thing called the divine creative process. On the macro level, that is how the universal mind works and the whole universe works. In the microcosm, the small, that's our individual use of this same spiritual principle. So when we are using this divine creative process, we are reflecting the entire universe's divine creative process. Spiritually, beauty is considered a divine attribute. It's a path to higher truths. It's an expression of love and inner goodness. And beauty can be a gateway to divine contemplation and that spiritual refuge we mentioned. And that's why we teach that beauty is one of the qualities of God. It's not a thing to be defined as a thing. It is a quality, a character. So there is a song we're going to play in a few minutes. And it's called "How Could Anyone?" It's written by Libby Roderick. And the lyrics are, "How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole?" And that's the beauty, the soul connection. It says, "How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul," that soul connection. When Reverend John Pileski sang this song back in 2003 for, I think it was the 20th anniversary of his parent church, he added a second verse, and it's, "You have lifted me up with your healing heart. You have offered me room to grow. And all the while you were telling me, be still and know that who I am and will always be, a friend who truly cares, how deeply you're connected to my soul." How deeply you're connected to my soul. And we think, how could anyone ever tell someone that they are anything less than beautiful? When we are looking with the eyes of God, we are seeing the beauty of the divine within everyone. Everyone. Emerson said, "Within man, each one of us is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particular is equally related, the eternal one." We are a part of that universal beauty. Everything is beautiful. When we look at it, with eyes of love and appreciation. And we recognize the grace that is beauty. Beauty itself is your appreciation of the grace that beauty brings with it. And so I thank you for your time and for your attention on this morning filled with so much love and light and life and energy. And everything is beautiful, and so it is.